Chapter 8.
So this is where we are. It's not where we had wanted to be. If half the world's gone mad, the other half just don't care, you see.
In an unexpected turn of events, the Separatists have blockaded the outer rim planet of Gaul. Just days ago, a Republic delegation was sent to the planet as Gaul has initiated its wish to withdraw from the Republic, and withdrawal negotiations have been ongoing for the past week. Now, the Separatists have cut off all supplies, trade, and communication with the planet. Sources say that the goal is to force Gaul to join the Confederacy now that they are willing to leave the Republic. Chancellor Palpatine himself has deemed the action cowardly and disrespectful of democracy. The Gar has refrained from commenting on their current course of action. However, with both a Republic senatorial delegation and a Gar battalion planetside, it is expected they will do everything in their power to ensure their safety. We have blockade expert Tyluk Shuor with us today to share some insights in prior blockades during the war and what they might indicate for the future of Gaul. Minister Shuor, welcome, and...
Obi-Wan turns off the news with cold, numb horror spreading through him. The Separatists have blockaded Gaul. Will most likely invade Gaul. Fuck. Worst case scenario, it seems, is now. And somehow, it's worse than they'd expected. Obi-Wan is woken by his comm. He blinks, trying to clear the sleep from his mind and to get his eyes adjusted to the darkness of his bedroom. Kark, what time is it? The caller, unfortunately, doesn't give up, and he drowsily throws out his hand and calls the device to him with the Force. It hits him square in the face. He sighs, loud and drawn out to fully express his annoyance, and rubs the spot on his forehead he hopes won't bruise. Yes, he answers, voice still hoarse from sleep, and he hopes that the person on the other end of the call better have a good reason. Part of him wonders if he should be more panicked, considering the general state of the galaxy around them, that this could be a planetary emergency. Well, he thinks, if it is, he will certainly be fully awake and functioning before he can blink.
Obi-Wan?
It's Cody's voice, more hesitant than Obi-Wan's ever heard it. He blinks, once then twice, and sits up, dragging a hand through his hair. Cody? He asks, confused and worried because, while yes, they exchange messages on a more than daily basis, and actually had their second holocall the other day, the other has never called him out of the blue. Are you all right?
Fine,
Cody says, sounding stiff and formal and not at all fine.
Have you heard about the situation on Gaul?
Obi-Wan frowns. Yes, of course, they're in our sector, he answers, almost hesitantly. Is this about the Gar's investigation on his crash and the subsequent attack? Is it because Gaul is now under Separatist blockade, with a Republic delegation in potentially mortal danger? We're not involved, Cody, I promise.
That's not what I'm worried about.
Cody interrupts quickly, an apologetic ring to his tone. There is a moment of silence that Obi-Wan doesn't fill, and then Cody sighs tiredly. An indication of his worry. The only one, for when he speaks, his voice is professional and steady, and every bit the martial commander that he is.
You might also be aware that there is a Gar battalion on Gaul, sent as protection detail for the senatorial delegation, on direct request of the Chancellor. They managed to get an encrypted message off-planet a few hours ago. The situation is dire. The blockade has been in place for close to 3 weeks now, and the Sepis are advancing. Gaul's capital Bloss has been almost destroyed, and the troops are doing what they can, but they are in urgent need of disaster relief supplies.
Obi-Wan runs a hand down his face. With the blockade, they haven't had any useful information, but what Cody is saying unfortunately does match expectations. We've been preparing refugee housing and support ever since we heard the news, he says, but we unfortunately don't have any notable amount of relief supplies readily available to donate.
We have the supplies, and the blockade runners to deliver them, but they don't have the range to reach Gaul from Coruscant.
Obi-Wan knows what Cody is asking. Part of him is upset, feels used, the other would come to him for this. But when he breathes out, slow and controlled, he needs to admit that he also understands. In the grand scheme of things, it's not even a terrible request to deliver disaster relief supplies to the people of Gaul and the soldiers fighting to try and protect it. Obi-Wan wishes he could agree, but it isn't Cody asking, it's the Republic. Melodon is a neutral planet, Cody.
I know, and I wouldn't have asked if we had other options,
Cody says, soft and apologetic. Then, his professional attitude drops and his voice is a desperate whisper as he says,
It's Rex's battalion.
Obi-Wan gasps.
Please, Obi-Wan, for my brothers.
Obi-Wan closes his eyes. I can't make that decision, he says. And then, because this is Cody and his brothers, and all the people suffering so unnecessarily on Gaul, he offers, But I'll organize an audience with the full council for you. Neild is going to hate him. It takes over 2 hours, all of Obi-Wan's persuasion skills, and help from Delia and Minister Vita, to have the council agree to even hear Cody out. A promising sign, even if Neild, the Minister of Finance Onimik, and Intergalactic Affairs Minister Sen, are far from actually convinced. When Obi-Wan sends a text message to Cody sharing the good news and asking when the man would have time, the reply that right now would work just fine is instant. A few minutes later, the hollow of Cody in armor, sans helmet and weapons, is projected from the hollow projector at the head of the conference table. If Cody is phased by the council, he does not show it and instead bows his head in greeting with a polite smile.
Thank you very much for your time and allowing me this chance to come to you in our time of need. I am Marshal Commander Cody of the 7th Sky Corps of the Grand Army of the Republic. Currently, the planet of Gaul is in the middle of a humanitarian crisis.
Is that what the Republic calls an invasion nowadays? Onimik asks with a scoff. Minister Onimik, common courtesy is to allow our visitors to finish speaking, Delia says, before either Obi-Wan can comment or Cody can reply. To Obi-Wan's surprise, Sarasi also steps in. Delia is right. Just because we don't agree with each other doesn't mean we should forgo common courtesy. We are our planet's council, not a bunch of kindergartners, she says, letting her gaze round the table. Commander Cody, she continues, nodding at Cody and making a go-ahead movement with her hand. Please continue.
Thank you, Triumvir.
Cody gives Sarasi a polite nod before turning to Onimik.
Although I can address the question asked, Gaul is indeed being invaded. Currently, the Separatists have blockaded the planet and have sent their droid army down to the planet's surface to try and forcefully get Gaul to join them. The Gaul armed forces, along with the Gar battalion that's planetside, have been trying to fight back or at least hold position, but the situation is dire.
This situation would not have even happened if you'd just let Gaul leave the Republic.
That is why a delegation was sent,
Cody says, before Sarasi can call order, his voice calm and steady, yet somehow still being firm.
To negotiate what a withdrawal would look like. The battalion was a safety precaution, requested by Chancellor Palpatine himself, based on rumors of a potential attack by the Separatists. I would say that precaution was grounded, wouldn't you?
He raises an eyebrow at Onimik. Onimik presses her lips together, but in the light of what they've just been told, is forced to nod in agreement. It is not the moment for it, but watching Cody speak, it's so very clear that if Obi-Wan hadn't been gone on the man before, he'd certainly be now. Cody continues his plea.
But one battalion can only do so much, especially with a blockade in place. We finally received word from the 501st on Gaul, but it wasn't good news. The capital city of Blas is under heavy siege, and much has been destroyed. There is a desperate need for disaster relief supplies. Medical supplies and food resources are low. The water cleaning facility of Gaul has been bombed, and they will run out in the next 5 days. People will suffer and die if we don't manage to send these supplies.
Cody pauses. 1, then 2, then 5 seconds. Just too long to be comfortable, but too short for anyone to protest. And just long enough for the true weight of his words to sink in with the council, their shock ringing like an alarm in the Force.
Unfortunately, our blockade runners don't have the reach needed to deliver the supplies to Gaul, which is why I am here, talking to all of you, to desperately request that you allow us to use Meladon as a staging ground to supply Gaul with relief and aid.
We did not ask to be involved in this war, Neil says coldly. In fact, I believe we made it clear not to be. Murmuring from around the table follows his statement.
And the people of Gaul did not ask to be invaded,
Cody shoots back sharply, silencing the room. Softer, he adds,
all we ask for is permission to use your planet to send supplies that could save thousands of lives.
In contrast to the silence that fills the room, the force is loud. It's not all good, nor is it all bad. It's a lot like an orchestra whose instruments all play at the same time, creating a terrible noise with no real distinction or order. A terrible mix of worry, anxiety, hope, and indignation. Even if this ends in a success and the Council agrees to help Gaul and the 501st, Obi-Wan knows he'll be fighting off a migraine for the rest of the day. You have given us much to think about, Cerasi says, when it becomes clear Cody has said all he wanted to. Her eyes dart around the table. I believe a debate is needed to come to a conclusion. She returns her gaze to Cody. Are you available for us to contact you either during our discussion in case of questions and afterwards to share the outcome?
Yes,
Cody nods.
I will be at your disposal until the Council has reached a decision.
Cerasi smiles, a small thing. Thank you, Commander. Before the holo disconnects, Cody dares to sweep his eyes to Obi-Wan. They've avoided looking at each other throughout the call, but now their eyes catch, if only for a fleeting second. Faster even is the worry in Cody's eyes. There and gone before anyone but Obi-Wan can notice. There isn't much Obi-Wan can offer. No words, no reassurances, not when the choice isn't his. He gives a small smile instead, and hopes Cody finds it reassuring. The discussion has been going on for over 3 hours, and they are going in circles. The Council and the Triumvirate are divided. Four clearly for, and four clearly against, with three ministers still clouded in hesitation. It doesn't help that for every argument for helping, there is one against it thrown onto the table, and vice versa. All of it, however, is so very logical, and when Neild crosses his arms in front of his chest and makes yet another claim that they will risk their neutrality if they help the Republic, Obi-Wan has had enough. Logic be damned, he thinks. Where is their compassion? What about our morality? He asks. The room descends into a rather stunned silence. Obi-Wan continues. We are at peace, but the rest of the galaxy is not. They suffer every day, and we know what that's like. How are we better than the Separatists invading Gaul if we look the other way? We'll be helping soldiers. Sen, the youngest council member, who at the time the peace was established wasn't old enough yet to hold a blaster, argues. Obi-Wan gives him a pointed look. Half of us were soldiers once, too. A painful reminder, judging by the wave of anguish going through the room. Good, Obi-Wan thinks. I've met the clones. They're good men that deserve our help just as much as the citizens of Gaul do. And who's to say the Separatists don't come regardless, Delia adds on, that they haven't seen us on a map right next to Gaul. Maybe we are another stop on their road of suppression and violence. They've already shown that they don't care about neutrality. The mood in the room shifts just a bit as realization dawns that even if they don't do anything now, their neutrality might be stripped from them. That, and their freedom. The Republic isn't asking us to join them, nor to fight, Obi-Wan says, hoping to give the last little push needed to tip the scales. Only that they can send their ships from Meladon. The question we need to ask ourselves is if we want to let thousands, even millions of people suffer a fate we know so painfully well, or not. We can make a difference here. Provide the help we wish we had when Meladon was still at war. I think, Cerasi says, slow and careful, and right before the room can explode into yet another discussion that will probably take them into another circle, that it's time to vote. Commander Cody, Cerasi says, standing in front of her chair with a straight back and a kind smile. The council has voted. You may use Melodon to transfer the supplies. Cody's relieved smile is radiant. It's almost enough to make Obi-Wan forget that on Sarasi's other side, Neild's chair is empty. He finds Neild in the gym trying to destroy a punching bag. Neild pauses when Obi-Wan enters, footsteps deliberately loud. He glances over his shoulders, angry fire burning in his eyes, and he turns back to the punching bag with a snap. "Leave me alone," he spits. "No." Obi-Wan makes his way over to one of the mats. "We're going to spar." The punching stops again. "What?" Obi-Wan turns his head, giving Neild a pointed look. "You're angry, you want to punch me. So let's spar. Get it out of your system." With how hot-headed Neild can be, it's always the best way. Neild hesitates, because of course he doesn't want to do the logical thing and give in to what Obi-Wan is offering. The urge to punch his friend, though, weighs out in the end. He stalks to the mat with a "fine," and tackles Obi-Wan before the other can blink. They roll and grapple and then get up and get started on a proper sparring match. Neild's on the angry offense and Obi-Wan's on the defense, ducking and turning and twisting, and drawing this out as long as possible. It only takes half an hour for Neild to find anger towards that, too. "Stop holding back!" Obi-Wan ducks around another fist thrown his way. "I'd wipe the floor with you in less than 2 minutes." Neild snarls. "Who fucking cares? You already did. Betrayed us all nice and good with that commander of yours." Obi-Wan freezes like a starship caught in a tractor beam. The words sting like a vibro knife. Neild takes his shock as an opportunity to tackle Obi-Wan to the ground, settling his full weight onto Obi-Wan's hips to pin him down. Obi-Wan doesn't fight back, falls harshly onto the mat, and looks up at his friend with a pained expression. "I didn't betray anyone. The council voted." "As if you can't influence that. Use the Force and suddenly 7 out of 11 votes yes to help the Republic." "I would never." "Neild, do you hear yourself?" Obi-Wan demands, lifting his left side to unbalance Neild and using that to flip them over. When he has his friend pinned down, he plants his hands just above Neild's shoulders and leans in close. "First you say my connection to Cody won't change the course of the galaxy, and now you're accusing me of what? Treason?" His arms are shaking, hurt and betrayal clear on his face. He swallows around the sudden lump in his throat and shakily says, "All I asked for is us to consider kindness and compassion." Neild's angry, gray eyes soften at Obi-Wan's words, glint with a combination of guilt and fear. He turns his head, looking away from Obi-Wan with a pained frown. "It's not about him," he admits in a whisper. His voice is hoarse and small as he continues. "You're not. What if they come, with their droids and their ships, and destroy all we've rebuilt?" "Then we'll fight them." Both Obi-Wan and Neild turn their heads to the doorway. Sarasi is standing in the doorway, and when she has their attention, makes her way over to the two men on the ground. "But we shouldn't fight each other just because we're afraid." She unceremoniously drops herself down onto the mat. "Are we really surprised that with the whole galaxy at war, we were dragged into it too?" A question none on Melodon had dared to even think about before, out of fear for the answer. They should have. Obi-Wan rolls off of Neild, hitting the mat with a soft thud. For a moment, all three of them lay there on their backs, staring up at the ceiling with the weight of their worry a tangible thing in the air. "What if we end up like Gaul?" Neild asks. Obi-Wan grimaces. "Then we hope that there are others out there that will help us the same way we are helping them." The silence that fills the gym isn't comforting, but at the moment, nothing is. At 155 meters in length, the 4A-class blockade runner is much larger than any of them expected and just barely fits into the largest docking bay. On top of that, Melodon's only spaceport, just outside Zahava, is now filled to the rafters with crates, guard troopers, and Melodon's own security forces. Half of their security forces are keeping an eye on the proceedings, and the other half is in the proceedings of checking every single crate to be loaded into the blockade runner, under the watchful eye of the council and the amused eyes of the troopers. Cody had not been amused when he'd arrived, and Neild had smiled politely and said that they'd be checking every single crate, His right eyebrow had twitched, and he'd excused himself right after to calm command about the new requirement, but he hadn't protested. Obi-Wan is sure Cody thinks it an inconvenience. It certainly is, and that knowledge certainly amuses Neeld, but it's also much more than that. It's protection, a safeguard to ensure that the stipulation is being followed and no weapons of any kind are sent to Gaul. Something that, of course, the Gar had promised, but which Melodon won't believe until they've verified it with their own eyes. And so, every crate is opened and checked. Obi-Wan has paired up with Neeld to join the small squad of 5 security officers performing their checks. He has also, selfishly, assigned a certain LAAT to his squad's responsibility. He's met with 4 familiar faces when they near, and he smiles at the men. "Hello there." Thumper's face lights up, and he gives Obi-Wan an enthusiastic wave. "Triumvir Kenobi!" Wooly is less formal, with his cheeky lopsided grin and casual, "Obi-Wan." Obi-Wan waves back at both of them, and then returns Waxer's nod as the trooper says, "Good to see you again, sir." "Sir," Kryze says with a mock salute, and then grins. "I have something for you." He darts off before Obi-Wan can reply. "I'd hurry," Wooly calls after him, eyes turning to the other side of the hangar, where Cody is still in his call. "The commander looks to be done soon." He does not specify whether that is with the call or the situation in general. It's probably both. "Let me introduce you to my fellow Triumvir, Neeld, a brother in all but blood," Obi-Wan says, smiling at his friend and knowing that the clones will understand. Neeld gives the men a tight smile. "Thank you for saving him." It's far away from a proper polite greeting, especially since the rescue was months ago, but Obi-Wan isn't surprised a "pleasure to meet you" isn't coming from Neeld's mouth, especially considering their fight in the gym a few days ago. They talked afterwards, Neeld apologizing for his rash behavior, for the hateful words he'd thrown at Obi-Wan that he hadn't meant and had only spoken out of fear. So for Neeld not to walk around like a thunderstorm waiting to happen is a surprise. In fact, Neeld has been guarded and almost demure ever since the arrival of the troops, taking it all in silently with sharp eyes. And then, in a completely unexpected move, he tells the men, "He's told us bits about you." Obi-Wan looks at Neeld in surprise at the almost friendly addition. His friend glances at him, and there is something thoughtful there. It reminds Obi-Wan of when he met the clones, how it had changed his perspective, made them more human, their situation more realistic, more familiar. If the men notice the silent communication, they don't comment. Certainly not as Kryze steps out of the LAAT again with a bottle in his hands. He proudly presents it to Obi-Wan. "Ship brewed especially for you." Neeld watches the exchange happen with an amused raised eyebrow. "Is that booze?" he asks, because of course the bottle of alcohol catches his attention and amusement. Obi-Wan chuckles. Their last batch was in stiff competition with Paint Stripper, an impressive feat considering the constraints of brewing alcohol in one's bathroom. Neeld plucks the bottle from his hands and opens it. He sniffs the bottle and makes a face. What's the flavor? "Alcohol," Kryze and Wooly say, almost simultaneously. Kryze continues, "Although we aimed for a lower percentage." "Cody did mention you'd been experimenting," Obi-Wan laughs, wondering if the changed recipe was the cause of the bathroom fire. "Thank you, Kryze. Give my regards to Longshot as well." Wooly's eyes shine with glee. "The commander told you?" "Yes," Obi-Wan says with a nod, and something tells him Cody will be either teased or talked about later. "We stay in touch." "That's one way of saying it," Neeld snarks. The men don't react, but their amusement is obvious in the Force. "Neeld," Obi-Wan sighs, trying to hide his smile behind his hand. "Yes," Neeld asks innocently, in his element now that he can embarrass Obi-Wan in front of an amused audience. Obi-Wan sighs and changes the subject. "Your pauldron looks nice, Thumper." Next to Wooly, Thumper brightens and turns his shoulder to show the orange, almost delicately painted flax. "Ah, thank you, Triumvir." Neeld squints at the pauldron. "Is that flax?" "Yes," Thumper says. "Did you see the fields on your way in?" Obi-Wan asks. Thumper nods. "We did. They look as impressive as you said. Saw the lake too, I think. The one that freezes in winter." Obi-Wan turns to Neild. I told the men about Melodon while on the Maverick. Thumper was quite taken with our home. First peaceful planet I heard about, Thumper says with a wistful sigh. Neild flinches at the words, and Obi-Wan wonders if it's because it makes him realize the clone has never known anything but war, or because Melodon might actually be standing right at the borders of it. Despite the fact they're helping, that this is a relief mission only, it certainly feels that way. Thumper hasn't noticed, and continues his wistful and excited words. It's too bad we can't stay a bit longer. I'd love to try the food and see the places you talked about. Seeing Melodon, I wish... Thumper snaps his mouth shut, and the men feel panicked and uneasy in the Force. You wish what? Neild asks, slow and careful, even though it's not all that hard to imagine what Thumper was about to say. Not for them. Not when they spent so long wishing for their war to be over. Thumper shakes his head. Nothing. A complicated expression flickers across Neild's face. He glances around the hangar, at the soldiers, and then at Obi-Wan, understanding dawning in his eyes as all their past conversations about the clones suddenly hit differently. Soldiers are always born out of necessity, not out of choice, he mumbles, more to himself as his eyes look far away. When he blinks, Neild focuses on Thumper again. Did they ask you? There's a flash of panic in Thumper's eyes. Obi-Wan clears his throat. Neild, how about we let the men get back to their job? Neild huffs. I only asked if the Republic gave them a choice to be soldiers. It's a yes or no question. Obi-Wan feels Cody approach before he sees him. Worry and protectiveness precede him before his quick strides bring him to stand next to Obi-Wan. The troopers straighten, all standing tall and just a tad stiff as they bring their hands up in a sharp salute. At ease, Cody says, and the relaxation of the men in front of him is immediate. He nods his eyes to the crates. I want the crates that have been cleared for transport brought to the ship immediately. His words are met with a chorus of, Yes, sir, and the men scatter, even if Wooly takes a second to wave a hand at Obi-Wan. Cody turns to Neild. I heard your question, he says, almost sounding accusing. The, my men shouldn't have to answer, unspoken, but loud and clear all the same. Neild, though, has smelled blood. He holds Cody's gaze. So? It's really not just a yes or no question, I'm afraid, Triumvir, Cody says, polite but stiff and unrelenting in his actual lack of an answer. Neild frowns. You lay down your lives for the Republic. Either they asked you to, or they forced you to. It's like the whole hangar has gone silent at Neild's words. The accusation hanging in the air that feels electric, like a thunderstorm is brewing. Cody stands steadfast and unwavering. He doesn't answer. It's answer enough. Obi-Wan is left standing between two men he cares deeply about, his hands itching to hug both of them. They are, however, alike in the regard that neither would be happy with that right now. They didn't even ask, Neild says, disbelieving and slightly hysterical. Anger boils around him as he looks around the hangar at the men in white and orange armor. He swallows. I hate the Republic. He says it like a curse. Cody straightens. We would not have been created without it. It sounds like a defense, but it makes Neild's face fall and the wetness of his grief swirls around him in the Force. Created for a war, no one asked them to fight. Neild, Obi-Wan says, his voice soft and hoarse. He clears his throat and lays a hand on his friend's shoulder. Why don't you go check with Sarasi how they're proceeding with their checks? It looks like our section has been almost fully cleared. Neild blinks before he turns to Obi-Wan. For a moment, he looks like he's going to argue, like he's going to ask more questions that Obi-Wan instinctively knows none of them will like the answers to. He doesn't. Fine, Neild relents. He turns to Cody and says, My apologies, Commander. He doesn't specify what he is apologizing for. Nor does Cody ask for any clarification when he nods. When the crates have been checked and the men get a half-hour break before breaking up into two groups, one leaving with the blockade runner and the other returning to the Maverick, Obi-Wan finds a moment alone with Cody. None of the men are subtle in their curiosity when Obi-Wan requests to speak with the commander privately, but neither are they surprised at the request itself. Not that there is much privacy to be found in a hangar full of people, but at least behind the blockade runner, they're hidden from curious eyes and listening ears. For all that their chats and calls were easy, the first few moments that they are faced with one another feel stiff and awkward. Obi-Wan, eloquent as he normally is, doesn't know what to say. Or rather, he wants to say too much and knows he shouldn't. Not here, not now, not yet. For theirs is a growing relationship still. I missed you is too familiar. A hug too forward. I'm glad you didn't die because there were many times I feared you might. Way too desperate. It's good to see you, he settles on eventually, with a smile he hopes speaks all the words he's elected not to voice. It's, Cody chuckles, the tenseness in his shoulders relaxing just a bit. He smiles at Obi-Wan, small and fond. Yeah, seeing you is the only good thing about this whole carking campaign. Obi-Wan takes a step towards Cody, reaching out a hand so he can curl his fingers around the other's pauldron for a moment, before pulling back. How are you? He asks softly, almost carefully. A complicated expression flashes over Cody's face at the question. Something surprised and vulnerable that makes Obi-Wan wonder how long it's been since someone's truly asked. Cody sighs, eyes darting to the ship next to him, and gives a wan, tired smile. Better now that we can send supplies. I'm happy we could help. I owe you. Even getting the council to agree to hear me out can't have been easy. Obi-Wan shakes his head and lifts his hand from Cody's pauldron to give a dismissive wave. It was about time we faced reality. Still, thank you, Obi-Wan. Cody reaches out a hand, circling his fingers around one of Obi-Wan's hands. I only hope that this, he waves his free hand at the blockade runner, won't change things between us, that you might think an opportunity like this is why I stayed in touch. I didn't, Obi-Wan says, shaking his head. He turns his hand in Cody's grip so he can intertwine their fingers. If anything, it showed me how devoted you are, how much you care. Cody smiles. Not just me. Obi-Wan shakes his head. Anyone would have helped. Cody scoffs. They wouldn't, and you know it. But you did, he says, expression softening. You care. I do, Obi-Wan murmurs, although he isn't sure if they're still speaking about the relief mission. Either way, the words hold true. Cody sucks in a breath. Me too, Obi-Wan. Their eyes catch and hold, blue meeting amber while they gravitate towards each other. Obi-Wan's heart speeds up in his chest, anticipation swirling in the force. He reaches up a hand to brush his fingers over Cody's cheek, and one of Cody's gloved hands strokes up the back of his neck. Is this okay? He asks, his breath ghosting over Cody's lips. Cody shivers, whispers a breathless, yeah. And, Commander. Both men freeze. Cody is the first to recover, letting out a harsh sigh, and all soft edges are gone within the blink of an eye. Yes, Waxer. Out of sight, Waxer clears his throat and, sounding apologetic, says, I've got Generals Jin and Windu on a call. They're asking for a sit-rep to align the next part of the campaign. Coming. Cody steps back and gives Obi-Wan an apologetic smile, his regret and annoyance radiating off of him. I'm sorry. Better luck next time, Obi-Wan says, offering an understanding smile of his own. Duty before pleasure. When he watches Cody walk away, he wonders how long it will be before they get the chance to meet again. End of chapter 8.
When it feels like the world's gone mad, and there's nothing you can do about it. No, there's nothing you can do about it. When it feels like the world's gone mad, and there's nothing you can do.